From WGCU News, this is Gulf Coast Live. A recently published news press story investigates allegations of a culture of racial discrimination and retaliation within the Fort Myers Police Department. Five officers have sued the department or the city in the past 16 years, including three such lawsuits in the past 6 years. Since 2011, six FMPD staffers have filed complaints with the Federal Equal Employment Opportunity Commission. FMPD leadership says there is no culture of racism or retaliation within the department. Meanwhile, city officials aim to hire a permanent police chief by the end of May from a pool of more than 100 applicants. We'll explore both sides of the discrimination complaints and what qualities officials are seeking in a permanent police chief. First, this news. This is Gulf Coast Live from WGCU News. I'm John Davis. Thanks for joining us. A news press investigation published earlier this month explores allegations of a culture of racial discrimination and retaliation within the Fort Myers Police Department. The report finds allegations of unequal application of the law when it comes to officers dealing with white citizens versus minorities. Five civil rights lawsuits have been filed by Fort Myers Police Department officers against the city or the police department, and six discrimination complaints have been filed with the Equal Opportunity Employment Commission against the FMPD. Interim Police Chief Dennis Eads denies allegations of a culture of retaliation. Meanwhile, city officials are looking to hire a permanent police chief by the end of May from a diverse pool of more than 100 applicants. Interim Chief Eads has led the department since August of 2015 after former Chief Doug Baker was fired for lying about phone records in an investigation into the wrongful arrest of former Southwest Florida resident and NFL player Nate Allen. On today's show, we'll take a closer look at what qualities officials are seeking in a permanent police chief for the city, and we'll hear from both the news press, the interim chief, and a former officer, both of whom are interested in the full-time job, of whether a culture of discrimination permeates the Fort Myers Police Department. Joining me in studio is Cody Delaney. He's the city government watchdog reporter for the news press who investigated and wrote the story that sparked today's discussion. Cody Delaney, welcome to Gulf Coast Live.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Also with us by phone is Fort Myers Ward 2 City Councilman Johnny Streets. Councilman Streets is also a 28-year veteran of the FMPD who first began with the department in 1971. He's also an applicant for the permanent police chief position. Thanks for your time today, Councilman Streets.
Good afternoon. Thank you for inviting me.
And later in the show, we'll speak with the current Fort Myers Police Chief, Dennis Eads. I invite listeners to join the conversation as well. Connect with our guests by calling 1-877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. Send email to gulfcoastlive@wgcu.org. Comment on Facebook at WGCU Public Media or tweet using the hashtag Gulf Coast Live. And Cody, let's begin with you. First of all, how long have you been with the news press as the city government beat reporter? And in that role, how frequently do you find yourself covering stories involving the Fort Myers Police Department?
Well, actually, I started with the news press last year. I actually came upon my one-year anniversary 2 weeks ago. I've been at all these city council meetings talking with city officials for the entire time. And the police department, fire department, all these public agencies that receive public dollars is under my purview as the city watchdog reporter. So, I mean, as often as things like this come up.
Yeah, what initially sparked your interest in pursuing this investigative piece?
Well, it started last November. The city council had a closed-door meeting to talk about strategy of how to handle the Audenia Nicole Thomas lawsuit, which was the most recent lawsuit filed against the police department in the city. At that meeting, of course, it was closed door, so I had to sit outside and wait. But after the meeting, the city officials, city council members, they hailed that decision to settle the lawsuit and pay out $300,000 as a step in the right direction. Those documents from that closed door meeting came available in January, and that's really when I started picking up and seeing what this lawsuit might have turned up.
Got you. And, Audenia Thomas alleged that her, unequal treatment began in 2006 and continued up until she filed that suit in 2013. What can you just tell us generally about, what Thomas says she experienced?
Well, she was saying that this treatment of her goes back for, I mean, a decade. Like you said, it started in 2006, and she complained, even went to city leadership, says, hey, this is what's going on. And city leadership declined to even open an investigation. But a lot of what she was saying, it stemmed around her trying to get a promotion. She applied for the promotion, and she says she was passed over because she was black, and the promotion was instead given to a white officer who had not even applied. And that's really the crux of her lawsuit, but just disparate treatment throughout her entire time after becoming a detective.
And there was more to it, too, specifically concerning one lieutenant, William Musante, and really just some interesting things that I saw in the lawsuit filed there that she alleges he would stop and search her personal items when she would come in the morning, something about a falsified report about a 3-hour training session that she was the only person who was required to take it. Tell us a bit more about that.
Right. Lieutenant Musante, he was the primary trainer when she was named a detective, and ultimately he became her supervisor, her direct supervisor. And Cecil Prendergast, current Lee County Commissioner, and he was the president of the police union at the time, he testified under oath that officers saw Lieutenant Musante target her, basically make her his point of focus. He was focusing in on her. And, yeah, like you said, he would come in and search her belongings, search her purse, her desk, everything within the unit that belonged to her. And Musante, he said under oath that, yes, he did search her belongings, but it was no more than what he would do to other people under his service.
Gotcha. And has Musante been named in other lawsuits by Fort Myers Police Department members?
Yes. As you said before, there were 5 lawsuits filed against the city and the department in the last 16 years. Musante was actually involved in 4 out of the 5, people alleging various things against him, racial discrimination, retaliation, things of that nature, also creating a hostile work environment.
Well, you know, we should point out, as you do in the article, you know, he's received dozens of letters of commendation. He's been Officer of the Month several times. I mean, would you maybe characterize his personnel file as something of a mixed bag?
Right, right. And he also has been disciplined 9 times for various actions or inactions, whether he failed to investigate some one complaint or just traffic accidents, which – I mean, it could go either way. A lot of people say 9 isn't a whole lot.
Well, and yeah, considering it does go back to 94.
Exactly. Right. He'd been there for 20 years.
Yeah. Well, and you had mentioned, Lee County Commissioner Cecil Prendergast, a 20-year veteran of the Fort Myers Police Department. He wasn't able to be with us today, but you talked about in your story what he had said in his deposition, not just as it relates to treatment of the detectives whose case we were just discussing, but also just harsher treatments or punishments for minority officers in general for the same infractions when white officers wouldn't get those harsher punishments.
Right. Mr. Prendergast, at the time when Mr. Prendergast was with the department and president of the police union, Lieutenant Musante was involved with internal affairs. And a lot of times he would be the main investigator following up with some of these complaints. And Prendergast testified that while Musante was leading up these investigations, he was dishing out more harsh punishment for minorities, blacks, Hispanic officers, versus white officers who would do the same thing or something even more, something more important. That's one thing I'm looking forward to is looking through these internal affairs investigations for the last 10, 15 years to see if that actually is the case. Prendergast said that black officers would come to him and say, yeah, I feel like I'm being discriminated against because of these internal affairs investigations.
I mean, did he highlight any specific instances in that deposition in the Thomas lawsuit?
Not that I can recall, but he said once Musante took over these investigations that more and more black officers were coming to him complaining about disparate treatment.
And the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission's final report on Thomas's filed complaint, it said regarding Musante that his conduct seemed, quote, suspicious. Do you know why that is?
Well, there was some confusion about the Deanne Lancey, her final investigation. She said that Musante showed animus towards black people, whether they were fellow employees or citizens. And she goes on to say in that same report that court documents dating back in 2000 had shown that Musante used the N-word in front of black officer or in front of white officers, excuse me. And he was using that word frequently. But myself or lawyers on both sides, they weren't able to find the information that corroborated that claim. So,
well, and is that something Pendergrass said that he saw himself or that he was told by others?
Well, that was the N-word. Pendergrass himself never testified about the N-word. He did say that Musante used a racial derogatory term, calling her a black person and using that as a negative thing. But he never once said the N-word about Musante, and these court documents, I couldn't find those either. So
okay. Well, following a recent news press investigation into an alleged culture of racial discrimination and retaliation within the Fort Myers Police Department, we're taking a closer look as city officials are in the midst of selecting a permanent chief. We're talking with news press reporter Cody Delaney, along with Fort Myers City Councilman and former FMPD officer Johnny Streets. We'll be joined later in the hour by Interim Chief Dennis Eads. I invite listeners to connect with our guests and join the conversation. Call to 1-877-GCU-TALK. That's 877-428-8255. Comment on Facebook at WGCU Public Media. Send email to GulfCoastLive@WGCU.org or tweet using the hashtag GulfCoastLive. And Cody, just to get a little background, tell us a bit about how officers go about filing these civil rights violation lawsuits. Don't they first have to file a complaint with the EEOC? How does that process work?
Yeah. If you feel that you're being discriminated against for whatever reason, your race, gender, things like that, you can't just go out and outright file a lawsuit against a government agency. You have to go through what's called the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission. You file a complaint through them, and what they'll do is they'll take your complaint, look at it on its face, and if there does seem to be a case there for you, they'll send out an investigator, which is what they did in the most recent lawsuit, Denny Nicole Thomas. They sent out an investigator, which we were just talking about her final report. But if there doesn't seem to be a case there, what they'll do is they'll issue a right to sue letter, which says, hey, we haven't found anything, but here you can pursue the matter yourself in court.
And Cody, you spoke with former FMPD officer Pedro Soto, who sued the department for discrimination in 2000. He was with the department from 1998 through 2002. What can you tell us about his case when that was settled and you know, what he told you regarding FMPD leadership during his time with the department?
Mr. Soto, he had been there for quite a while, and he said throughout his entire employment with the Fort Myers Police Department, he was referred to by white superior officers as a racial epithet about his heritage, his Hispanic heritage. And
like commonly, like a nickname,
commonly, like, hey, such and such, or oh, what do you know, such and such, things like that, and oh, you're just this guy, and so yeah, that was common for him, and he said throughout his entire employment he had to deal with that, but again, he as well felt like he was passed over for a promotion because of his heritage and his race. In his particular situation, there was three spots open, and he scored in the top three in the test. He was promised your promotion will be forthcoming. But then within weeks, he said these fabricated reports that basically smeared his credibility just started popping up. And lo and behold, he was passed over for a white officer who also had a more extensive disciplinary background with the department. But he said leadership has always been a problem with the police department, and there's really no filter of weeding out people who give out promotions or have the promotions and seeing if they show any kind of animus towards people of different races.
And other FMPD officers who have sued the department include Gene Bobrun in 2000, Leon Young in 2010, O'Neill Kerr in 2013. Can you tell us a bit about those cases, and do you see similarities or patterns in what these lawsuits are alleging?
The biggest pattern with them is promotions. People being turned down for promotions or passed over for less experienced, less skilled white officers. With the first one, Jean Bobrun, he was a Haitian individual, and the problem with him was he witnessed. Multiple experiences with not Musante, but one of Musante's best friends on the force. He's no longer there, but he would, while they're out and on patrol, he would deal with regular citizens, whether you're a victim of a crime or a witness. He would say these racially charged words at them and things of that nature. But we just talked about Pedro Soto, and O'Neill Kerr was another situation of he felt like he wasn't being treated fairly.
Well, Fort Myers City Councilman Johnny Streets, I mentioned earlier that you started with the FMPD in 1971. Tell us a bit about your experiences as they relate to, you know, discrimination or retaliation that you either saw or experienced yourself.
Well, I couldn't say that much about the discrimination and whatever, because my thing, I was there to do a job and do the job mm-hmm. with the highest respect and regards for human life and to protect and serve. I'm sure perhaps, like all departments, there's always something. But the issue comes up when there is something that no one looks into. And what you have is those are conditions. And when those conditions are not ethical, then someone needs to look into them and investigate them. When they're not investigated, those conditions become problems. And usually when they become problems, then it's somebody else's fault. And that's where you have the real issues of discrimination and retaliation, so forth.
The stories that you've heard, you know, either through the Adenia Thomas lawsuit or some of these other folks who have sued in recent years, you know, does that kind of send echoes to you, you know, regarding your own experiences, you know, going back to the 70s? I guess what I'm trying to determine is, do you think that this has been a long-term problem that has just transferred from leader to leader?
Well, I wouldn't say that. Mm-hmm. I would say that in my experiences, even if it was there, we dealt with it in a professional way that makes sure that it didn't happen to anybody else who were coming behind me. I do agree with what you said. I think in the changing of administrations and perhaps even a generational thing, it may created some of these issues that we're dealing with today. But on any case, any type of discrimination, any type of retaliation is not acceptable.
Mm. And, you know, when it comes to things that I think you had talked about in Cody's article, like black officers restricted to only patrolling certain areas, or the N-word being used over police radio, or, you know, only getting secondhand patrol cars to you know, black officers. Did you ever file a complaint about desperation?
Well, let me clarify that.
Sure.
When I came on in the 70s, particularly two of us, one guy, he's retired, also lives in Fort Myers. And when we came on, we were considered the new breed of police officers. The officers prior to us were hired as what they might call second-class police officers. But those officers, you know, took a tremendous amount of hostility and whatever for us to be who we are. And, you know, they did what they had to do at the time of the atmosphere, because they couldn't patrol the white communities. They were not allowed to maybe work accidents and arrest white people. But that changed. Mm-hmm. That changed because there's a thing which is still today, because police standards. So those things changed, and we were, for what those officers had to go through it, we were able to do what we need to do to move the departments further. So, you know, I think education had a lot to do with it. That I think the most important things that we were able to gain the respect of our supervisors, and certain things we were not going to accept. And if we did hear something, we would deal with it behind closed doors immediately.
Gotcha. And Cody, in investigating this, did you look into like education efforts within the Fort Myers Police Department when it comes to, you know, things like cultural sensitivity or cultural literacy?
I know members of the department, they do diversity training, and that was one thing that came out. Mr. Pendergrass, I don't know if he filed a complaint, but he definitely did go to multiple police chiefs, city leaders, complaining about what was going on. And one of the responses from those complaints was mandatory diversity training in the late 90s. And I know officers are required to go through things like that, and they do have training for those things as well. But when you have an officer, to answer the question, yes, mm-hmm. There is training and things like that.
And Councilman Street, back when you were on the force, was there anything like that in place, or that probably didn't come till later?
No. Some of that was there. In fact, during my tenure with the police department at the police academy, I taught ethics and professionalism, introduction to the criminal justice system, and was an assistant in the firearms training. So we definitely was on top of doing that time. The buzzword was diversity and multiculturalism. So those opportunities were afforded the people. The issue was, and I was privileged to one, using the term protect and serve, and I had one particular officer who was white in my class who said that, his thing was to protect and serve certain people. And he and I had a conversation based on the fact that maybe you might be in the wrong profession because you took an oath, and if you're not going to honor that oath, well, then I suspect that you would have some serious problems down the line. And subsequently, I think that officer took that advice and left the department.
Right. Well, the news press recently published a story investigating allegations of discrimination and retaliation within the Fort Myers Police Department. We're taking a closer look with Cody Delaney, the reporter behind the story, and former FMPD officer and current Fort Myers City Councilman Johnny Streets. Connect with our guests. With your comments and questions, phone lines are open at 1-877-GCU-TALK. That's 877-428-8255. Tweet using the hashtag Gulf Coast Live or send us a message on Facebook at WGCU Public Media. And Cody, I noticed in your article that quotes from Interim Police Chief Eads seem to be kind of short on details that, you know, regarding a culture of racism or retaliation. But I know the two of you spoke for, you know, about a couple hours or so. Did he offer more lengthy explanations that perhaps didn't make it into the article?
Yes. One of the things that he brought up, and it was also mentioned in Commissioner Pendergrass's testimony, Pendergrass said that while he was at the president of the union, sergeants and officers would show racially and sexist-charged videos during these police briefings. And I asked Interim Chief Eads about that, and Eads says, well, yeah, videos were shown, but they were not racist or sexist in nature. And I asked him, go in detail, and he said, well, some of the videos that were shown were to kind of try and lighten the atmosphere,
sure,
lighten the mood. One of the things that he said that I thought was powerful was, you know, when you're working on a police shift and you come in and just up and down adrenaline dumps and things like that, it's just you need something to kind of take the, you know, cut the tension a little bit. So videos were shown to kind of ease the tension and kind of make a lighter atmosphere. But he said the only video that he saw that was racist in nature was a video clip that you can find on YouTube about either Friday, the movie Friday, or Next Friday, or the Friday After Next. One of those video clips was shown, and he says that when that came up and people started laughing about it, he said that's when he kind of put an end to the video showing during briefings.
Right.
He said that he felt that was inappropriate.
Well, and Cody, going back a bit, in 1991, the city hired its first female police chief, Donna Hansen. Was she initially seen as someone who would change the culture within the department?
Yeah, that was the entire reason why she was brought in, was to kind of break up the promotional structure of how people became police chief within the department. Former Mayor Wilbur Smith said the old structure was, well, you have a couple majors, and once one chief leaves, you choose the next chief from those two majors. He said, well, I wanted to bring in somebody from outside to break up that promotional structure, as well as look at how we're doing things versus the way she was used to doing them in Miami.
But that didn't end too well, did it?
No, not very well. It sounded to me like she was run out of town. Apparently she ruffled some feathers, lost some rapport from officers within the department, and people started complaining about her leadership.
Councilman Streets, did you want to add something there?
Well, I worked up on the Chief Hansen, and excuse me.
Sure.
In fact, I met her in Metro-Dade Police Department several years prior to that, involving she was the instructor, along with a couple of other people, on multicultural and diversalism. And we struck up a conversation in regards to what Fort Myers is all about. And, you know, there was the applications had gone out for the police chief position, and she ended up applying for it and not thinking that she would even get a second look. And she ended up did get several looks. And she came with some of the things that the mayor and the city was looking for at the time, and she ended up getting a job. I thought that she was great, you know, for the dispersing and getting people involved in police services and using that term, protecting and serving communities and being involved, especially from a community and policing standpoint. So, but beyond that, for the other issues with some of the other leaders, that was not my preview.
And Councilman Streets, you know, following Donna Hanson's tenure, Larry Hart was chief. As an African American, did Hart's leadership have any impact on the atmosphere in the department?
Well, I thought, first of all, Larry and I were great friends. I came in before Larry, and first of all, he was from here, like I was. People knew him. He had a propensity to get things done. He treated people well. But what I think where part of this issue may have started is probably under his rim as police chief, because I think some people used him in areas where to gain position to do certain things. And I just didn't think it went well, and I don't think he really had the people in place to curtail some things that were starting to happen beneath him. So, but if I had to say anything, I think that this is where some of this may have started, and I think some people use his kindness as a weakness.
All right. And I know, Cody, that Larry Hart didn't really want to be part of your story. Did he tell you why?
His concern was first and foremost, he was concerned with why I was doing the story. Mm-hmm. And I tried to explain to him all of this is going on while the city's getting ready to select the next police chief. And I kind of asked him, you know, is this the way the city needs to be going? You know, what kind of path do you think the city should go as far as the next police chief? And his main concern was him. He didn't want to be a part of it because he thought it would serve as to divide the community and the police department further than, you know, where it already is.
All right. Well, let's take a call now from Sarah in Cape Coral. Sarah, welcome to Gulf Coast Live. You're on the air.
Yes, I just wanted to make a comment. If this racism is going on within SMPD, just imagine, and I'm one of the residents in the city of Fort Myers, look what we're going through with these racist officers. I mean, it's a shame. It's just not fair to us as taxpayers.
All right. Well, thank you so much for the comment, Sarah. You know, Cody, I know you were mostly focused on what was going on within the department, but did you see much in terms of, you know, legal complaints being filed about officer activity in terms of interactions with citizens?
Yeah, that's actually something I'm following up with now, looking into how like you said, if this is going on internally, is there any spillover in the community? Are people in the community feeling like they're being treated differently because of their race or gender? And as Mr. Pendergrass testified to, that officers are being encouraged to target minorities in the community, pull them over, abuse search and seizure laws to make arrests. That's something that, first of all, is a very serious accusation.
Yeah, I was going to say that's not something you even want to say unless you have some kind of proof.
Right. Well, he said it under oath, under penalty of perjury, too. Mm-hmm. So that's something I'm following up with as well.
Gotcha. Well, we all know, as we've mentioned, that the city is in the process of selecting a permanent chief. They hope to do so by the end of May. Can you tell us a bit about your conversation with the city manager, Saeed Kazemi, who ultimately will make that decision? Was any of what you were investigating like on his radar?
When I had my initial interview with him, he seemed blown away by what my investigation had might have turned up, and he said he was shocked. He didn't know anything like this was going on. And then when I asked him, he said, basically, look, I can't control what has happened before me, but moving forward, if this is true, I'll put an end to it. And he says he's looking for a police chief that would best match the community that it serves. And I'm not sure really what that means other than the minority population and things of that nature.
All right. And, you know, the panel of people that will be interviewing applicants for the chief position coming up early next month, it's pretty diverse. It even includes some local religious leaders. Councilman Streets or Cody Delaney, do either of you know if that's been part of the hiring process in the past?
Well, somewhat. It's a little bit different, and it depends on the mindset of what the city manager is trying to do and who he's trying to attract. I want to go back just a couple of a few minutes ago.
Absolutely.
When Cody was talking about something, and I think Cody, well, I don't think he was here then, but in 2013, as a council member, I submitted a report to the previous city manager and the previous police chief in regards to my concerns about a serious leadership deficit within the department. And some of those things that are happening now, we talked about those back then. But what I didn't see was a real urgency to look into these issues as opposed to just, well, it didn't happen, and, you know, oh, Johnny's just mad with the police department. Well, and I always say this, Johnny was never mad with the police department. That department made me who I am today, along with my community and the city of Fort Myers. So I wasn't against them. I was more with them. But I saw these issues coming up little by little. And as a person who represents people, it would have been wrong for me not to bring these issues up. You know, I wasn't going alone to get along. So these issues have been out there for a while. And even with Ms. Thomas back in 2006, when the complaint was first made to the Human Resources Department, even to this day, which is 2016, there was never an internal investigation. And I brought that to the issues. I said, well, wait a minute. You all haven't even looked at this. So we got some issues here that need to be resolved, and those issues have been simmering and manifesting itself to higher levels, where this is why we have the conditions and the problems now that probably perhaps, and I say this openly, that no one inside that department right now might be able to straighten out.
All right. Well, you yourself are applying for the position. Tell us why.
Well, first of all, I know the department in and out. Some of the people that were there when I left, I know some of them when I came there. Well, they came when I was there, and I left them there. And I look at, you know, the thing of the how policing is being dispersed in certain communities. Certain communities are being policed, and certain communities are being used as protected. So there's a difference there, and we don't need to go into that right now. That's another subject. But the bottom line is that it starts with leadership. And leadership has to be aware of what's going on in your city. I don't care where it is. One of the things that we use as a, you know, people talk about statistics, that's fine. But when things are not right, the communities in any community will let you know when things are not right. It's just like anything else. The communities have been talking, and the communities have been telling, but we haven't, as a police department, been listening. Right. We hear you, but we're not listening. So my thing was, even with the previous administrations, is that we would sit down and have conversations, is that there's no sense of urgency to even look into some of these issues. So when you have what you have now and all of these lawsuits is being filed, and I would always say that, look at it like this. I know there's a thing called the Policeman's Bill of Rights, but if there's no complaint filed or you don't investigate it within 180 days, well, then that officer gets off scot-free. That was my concern about, we got problems there, and we're paying out these monies, the taxpayers' monies, that the people there would never be disciplined. So it would probably continue unless someone makes some great changes within the department. You know, to answer your question, it's about people's capabilities, not about their likabilities to get things done. And if you treat people right, whether it's good or bad, if you treat them right and you tell them the truth and you look into these issues, my only comment, and I would say, and I'll let somebody else talk, is that the error that I think FMPD made years ago, that under certain administrations, it wanted to be popular rather than be smart.
Okay. And Cody, you know, you consulted with a Dallas-based recruiting firm, you know, about the hiring of a permanent chief. What did they tell you regarding whether the position should go to someone from outside the department rather than hiring someone from within? Did they really think that was even an issue?
Well, he said, you know, there's pros and cons with anything like that. But he said, regardless of whether it's an internal candidate or somebody from the outside, that it should fit the city's needs, the city council's needs, should align with the city manager's goals for the city. But he says, you know, at the end of the day, you just have to use common business sense. And if there's turmoil going on within the department, it makes more business sense to go outside.
And since it's publication, how would you characterize the response you've gotten to the article?
People have reached out. People have really started to come out of the woodwork, whether it's average citizens, people in the community who felt they have been discriminated against or mistreated by the police. I've had police officers come out and reach out to me and say, your reporting was dead on. But then there were some of those people who were saying, you know, why are we looking past at the past? Let's look forward and move into the future with what's going on.
Gotcha. Well, that is all the time we have for this portion of the program. But thanks so much to my guests. Cody Delaney is the city government watchdog reporter for the News Press. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
And Johnny Streets is a Fort Myers City Council member and a 28-year veteran of the Fort Myers Police Department. Councilman Streets, thanks for your time today as well.
Thank you for having me.
We're taking a short break, but when we return, we continue the conversation as we sit down with current Fort Myers Police Chief Dennis Eads. That conversation's just ahead. Stay with us. You're listening to WGCU NPR for Southwest Florida. Welcome back to Gulf Coast Live from WGCU News. I'm John Davis. Thanks for being with us. Today we've been focused on a News Press story published earlier this month exploring allegations of a culture of racial discrimination and retaliation within the Fort Myers Police Department. We've heard from the reporter who investigated the piece, Cody Delaney, who says current Fort Myers Police Chief Dennis Eads denies that such a culture exists. Chief Eads took over leadership of the department on an interim basis last August following the departure of Chief Doug Baker. Now city officials are in the process of selecting a permanent chief among a field of more than 100 applicants, including Eads, who's been with the department for nearly 30 years. Chief Dennis Eads, welcome back to Gulf Coast Live.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me on.
And I invite listeners to join the conversation as well. Phone lines are open at 1-877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. Post comments and questions on our Facebook page at WGCU Public Media or tweet using the hashtag Gulf Coast Live. And first of all, I just wanted to get, you know, your initial response to the publication of Cody Delaney's article.
I thought it was pretty one-sided. I didn't see much neutrality there whatsoever. It kind of looks like the author took whatever someone told them and just printed it, regardless whether it was based on fact or not.
Well, I mean, the article does highlight, you know, 5 civil rights violation lawsuits filed by FNPD staff in the last 16 years, including 3 in the last 6 years under former Chief Baker's tenure, as well as 6 filings with the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, some $420,000 paid out in lawsuit settlements to those alleging disparate treatment of minority staff members. If this doesn't reflect something about the internal culture of the department, what does it indicate to you?
Well, it indicates that there was first of all, the 5 cases that you're looking at, I think 3 of them, 3 of the individuals who were officers at the time mm-hmm. were actually physically arrested for, or possibly 2 of them were arrested for violation of Florida statute. The others were terminated for violation of a policy that the Chief Baker felt was egregious enough to commit that termination on. Mm-hmm. There was one individual, O'Neill Kerr, who was fired, and the command staff did not agree with that, and we all recommended that, you know, he keep his employment. But the chief, you know, made a decision to fire him, and then there was an agreement at some point that he'd come back to work.
And so you're saying there's more behind these cases, and I mean, do you think it's important we point out that a settlement doesn't necessarily mean that the city or the department is admitting wrongdoing? It's just a, you know, kind of a way to end the suit as well.
Yeah, I think it's important to point out that there's always more to the story than what gets put out, you know, and sometimes in the media, not all the time, but in some cases. There's far more to all these stories, absolutely.
Well, and just tell us then more generally how you would characterize the internal culture of the department now. I know that soon after you had taken over as chief, you know, you had talked about there being a morale issue.
Yeah, I think actually the morale is in an upward, you know, upward turn. For lack of a better term, I think things are going well internally. And as you said, though, those things that are pointed out in the article, happened under different leadership. Yes, I was here, but I was not the final decision maker in any of those instances. And I think the time is gone. And I also have to say that some of the cases I did I was a patrol officer, I believe, and one of them I had absolutely no part or no whatsoever. So to relate me to that would be pretty careless.
Do you think some of the morale issues could stem, you know, simply from the stress of the job itself? You know, I think maybe a lot of people haven't thought about what actually is involved in being a police officer.
Well, I mean, I think a certain amount of stress always comes from just the position itself. Absolutely. 100%.
And, you know, having been with the department for nearly 30 years, can you just tell us a bit about your time with FMPD and your rise to the chief position?
Well, I mean, you talk about my entire time being here?
Sure. Like when you started off and what different positions did you hold over the years?
Yeah, I mean, I started in 1986. Seems like a lifetime ago, which I guess actually to a lot of people, it was an entire lifetime. And I've pretty much held every position within the agency up to now the interim chief's position. You know, it's obviously a patrol officer. That's where everybody starts. I worked on the streets. I worked as a narcotics detective. I worked as a canine handler. I was a member of the SWAT team for 20 years. I was the commander of the SWAT team for a good portion of that. I was assigned to the regional drug enforcement task force where we work, you know, drug cases all over this is not only this area, but it took us out of state as well, and to the East Coast and Tampa areas. I was a line supervisor. I was a supervisor in charge of the traffic unit and the canine unit. Then I was obviously a patrol supervisor, just in charge of a shift, a lieutenant in charge of a shift. I've always been involved in the training program quite heavily throughout my entire career. And when I was promoted to captain, I was just put in the position as the bureau captain of Detective Division. A little over 3 years in that position, and I was put as the bureau captain of Professional Standards, which oversees internal affairs, training, and accreditation. And then here where I am today, as of August 2015.
Gotcha. And, you know, you stepped into the chief position, you know, amidst the fallout from the wrongful arrest of NFL player Nate Allen. Shortly after that, Fort Myers experienced the high-profile shooting at ZombieCon. I know rallies and protests have persisted regarding, you know, gun violence, particularly in the Dunbar community. Has your so far tenure as chief come at perhaps a particularly tumultuous or challenging time for the department?
I mean, I think it's challenging to be a police officer, period, right now, no matter where you are. I mean, it's got to be something that you have a passion for and a love for. It's not just a job. So the there has been quite a few things that have occurred. But then again, this is not a quiet little sleepy town anymore either.
Right, right. Well, since you've become chief, have any of your officers come to you with complaints or concerns about unfair treatment or racial discrimination?
Well, as you know, there's one case now that's in the works with the civilian employee, but that's something that can't be discussed because it's under investigation.
Certainly, certainly.
And then there's another open investigation between two internal officers where an allegation was made. That also can't be discussed until it's completed and over with.
Would you say that there's, you know, generally something like that going on and off just all the time?
Well, I won't say all the time, no. Has it happened on occasion?
Sure.
Absolutely.
Okay.
And I think that happens anywhere where you have a group of more than one. Eventually someone's going to say something or do something that someone else doesn't like, and there's going to be a complaint filed. Mm. That's pretty much, you may have very well experienced it yourself at some point in your lifetime, maybe not involved, but actually seen it or witnessed it.
Mm. And before you became chief, did you ever notice or experience anything like the allegations explored in the news press article, allegations like, and this is more about not internally, but outside the department with policing, allegations like we heard earlier from Lee County Commissioner Cecil Pendergrass about minority officers, or not officers rather, but minorities being, you know, targeted, an equitable exercise of search and seizure laws when it comes to the suspect's race, things along those lines?
Well, that's a good question. I'm glad you asked it. I'm going to ask it on two parts because I think you started one direction and you went back another.
I did.
one thing is to clarify what I actually said in the news press was I was asked if I'd ever witnessed it. No, I have not witnessed it. Otherwise, I would be a witness and or a complainant in the investigation of the case. You would see my name right there. Has it been claimed? Absolutely, along with lots of other invalid complaints. As far as the disparity with stops and things such as that for minorities, that is something that we track. And it has shown that there is not a disparity. I mean, yes, you're going to have more black individuals pulled over in black neighborhoods. You're going to have more white people pulled over in white neighborhoods. That's just the way it goes.
All right. And we're speaking with Fort Myers Police Chief Dennis Eads as we explore a recent news press article investigating claims of discrimination and retaliation in the Fort Myers Police Department. Listeners can add comments and questions to the conversation by calling 1-877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. Write to us on Facebook at WGCU Public Media or tweet using the hashtag Gulf Coast Live. And Chief Eads, you yourself invited the Department of Justice to perform a full audit of the department following a falsified report to the DOJ's Civil Rights Division from March 8th with your name on it, filing a complaint against a lieutenant in the department. What's the story behind that? You didn't write this, but somebody else filed it falsely with your name on it?
Well, that's something else that actually was inaccurate and slanted, even though it was, you know, the facts were actually presented in the news press article. It's not that the DOJ is looking into some cases, you know, that it's happened so much that the DOJ is now drawn an interest in looking into it. That's the way I read it, and that's the way I took it, and I'm sure everybody else did too. There was a complaint. I got a call from a DOJ attorney and asked had I filed a complaint against the Fort Myers Police Department for cases of discrimination or and such as that. Talked to them. No, I certainly did not. They sent me a copy of the complaint. I looked at it. Had my name on it as the complainant. Someone obviously, you know, forged. I mean, it was written, so it wasn't a signature. But what someone did try and do was duplicate my initials on each page to show that I had initialed each one of the pages. And it was basically transcripts and stuff from Commissioner Pendergrass's statements, which you already referred to from the Nicole Thomas case.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But you don't have any idea who would have done that?
No, I wish I did.
Yeah.
That would be interesting to know. I mean, I'm sure I know who they are. I just don't know who did it.
Right, right.
Sure, you know. I'm sure I would know who the individual is if I knew. It's not some random person from the community that did it, I guarantee you.
Sure, sure.
But when I got them on the phone, I asked, you know, is it interesting that some, you know, this is done? Is there any way that I could invite DOJ to come in and go through and do a complete audit of everything we have. I got a response back that no, they wouldn't do that, no, based on a request such as that. But they were going to try to help me with a solution, and we ended up with about a 7 or 8-person conference call, and I ended up with an individual from the COPS program, which is a part of DOJ, and waiting to hear back from them to come in and look things over and give us some recommendations for change and what's working well, what's working good, and what we need to do to make everything better.
All right. So it sounds like DOJ might be interested in getting more involved.
Right.
Yeah, all right.
But it's not because of a complaint filed. It's at my request.
Sure.
It's through the, like I said, it's through the community-oriented policing program, which is a pretty large program. We've actually had them involved before, and if everything goes the way I hope it does, they can identify if there's training needs identified. Then we'll work again with the Diagnostic Center, as we did with some other issues in years past, and they'll help fund the training issues that need to be, and would help alleviate some of the local taxpayers' dollars so we can receive some additional training if they identify a need.
And as far as that community-focused training is concerned, does that include some of this cultural literacy training that we've talked about on this show in the past with folks like Dr. William Glover with Mount Hermon Ministries or Yemisi Olorun-Tula-Coates with Lee Memorial Health System? Is that an ongoing effort?
Well, Mrs. Coates and Pastor Glover and I worked together quite a while. It hasn't come quite to fruition yet. It's not anyone's fault. It just hasn't gotten to that point in its life yet. Working on a cultural awareness program for the officers and the community members of both alike. And one of the other programs we've already scheduled it to be here, whether I'm here or not, it's scheduled to be here in the fall, which is it's a bias-based policing course to basically help officers identify biases that every human being has, whether you know you have them or not.
Mm-hmm.
And it's put together by, it's called Fair and Impartial Policing, and it's put together, it's designed by Dr. Lori Friedel, professor of University of South Florida in Tampa.
And just a final question here. You are on the short list of candidates that's just been reported on this morning as far as taking the permanent chief position. Do you think it's important for the person who does get the position to have that institutional insider knowledge?
Well, I think it does. I mean, I look at this agency, anyone that comes from the outside, in my opinion anyway, but this is not an ending point for them. This would be more of a stepping stone. You know, I've been here. I live here. This is, where I've been, and I think with my knowledge of internal and the community, the city as a whole, all the relationships I've built with all the other agencies, the state attorney's office, FDLE, the sheriff's office, the FBI, the federal agencies, I think that's, pretty much invaluable, and we're all working very well together right now.
All right. Well, that is all the time we have for today's show, but thanks so much to my guest, Interim Chief of the Fort Myers Police Department, Dennis Eads. We appreciate your time.
Thank you.
There's more information on today's show and past editions of the program online at wgcu.org/Gulf Coast Live. Continue the conversation on Facebook at WGCU Public Media and on Twitter using the hashtag Gulf Coast Live. Thanks to my producers Richard Chinqui and AJ Leonard. This is WGCU FM Fort Myers 90.1, WMKO Marco Island 91.7 FM, NPR for Southwest Florida.